Hello and welcome to People and Profit. I'm Charles Pellegrin. First of all, Happy New Year to you all. And for our first show of 2025, we'll look ahead to what this year has in store for the global economy, whether challenges or opportunities. From the United States to China, by way of Europe, we'll take a comprehensive look at what global trade, growth, and innovation are going to look like and what all of that could mean for the climate. Well, let's start by looking at the big picture. The latest forecast by the International Monetary Fund shows global output remaining the same in 2025 as in 2024 at 3.2%, a figure the institution calls stable but underwhelming. The U.S. will see its growth slow down, as will China, while the euro area will see some improvements but from a low base. Well, here to give us his expert economic forecasts on the year ahead is Rafael Gallardo, chief economist at Carmignac. Thank you for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, Donald Trump will return to the White House when he's inaugurated on January 20th. Top of his economic agenda will be tariffs, his favorite word in the dictionary, he said it. He's promised to increase import duties on most goods entering the United States. The consensus among economists is that this will increase inflation and slow down growth. So why is he doing it? Before we turn to you, Rafael, let's listen to his pick for Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick.
We all say, make America great again. But let's just go over for a minute what that means. Because we all say it as a slogan. When was America great? At the turn of the century, our economy was rocking. This is 1900, 125 years ago. We had no income tax. And all we had was tariffs. All we had was tariffs.
So, Rafael, what do you make of this reasoning and what will it mean for the economy under Trump?
Well, where do I begin? I think what we just heard is like the kind of economic illiteracy of some of the people that are surrounding Trump, which is pretty dangerous. He's referring to a time when the U.S. economy was an emerging market. They were growing very strongly. But yes, they were funding themselves through tariffs. This is, and you can find that in developing economies because you don't have a performing state that can actually levy taxes, less distortionary taxes like income taxes or, VAT. And basically, at the turn of the century, as Lutnick is saying, federal spending was actually 2% of GDP, so it was easy to fund it through tariffs. Of course, now you would have to, if you wanted to fund the government only through tariffs, you would have to increase tariffs on imports to 250%, which doesn't make any sense. So I think it's very dangerous to hear this kind of speeches. Fortunately, Trump is also surrounded by people who understand economics and understand markets, like Scott Bessent or Stephen Miron or Kevin Hassett. But it's pretty dangerous because beyond what Rod Lutnick is saying, Trump believes that tariffs are not only a great way to reindustrialize America, which is a promise he has done to the swing states, and this is how he won the election, but Trump also sees tariff as a way to fund the fiscal deficit. And he also sees tariff as a geopolitical bargaining chip to obtain all sorts of concessions from other states. So they will be applied and they will be distortive. And as you were mentioning, that is very dangerous for the economy as a whole. But this is not the only contradiction you have in Trump policy program. And I think this is one of the characteristics of a demagogue, that you promise anything and everything to get into power. And once you're in power, you have to deal with the consequences. And this is very unfortunate for the U.S. economy and for the world, unfortunately.
So a lot will depend on which voices around Trump will gain the most favor with the
Absolutely.
Presidents. let's keep on moving now. Let's have a look at what's happening at the world's second largest economy after the U.S., and that's China. The country could be facing even more headwinds in the form of those tariffs from the United States, hurting the country's export sector, for instance. And this is happening at a time when domestic consumption is really failing to pick up post-COVID. President Xi Jinping nonetheless expressed confidence in his New Year's address. Let's take a listen.
The current economic situation faces new circumstances, including uncertainties in the external environment and pressure from the transition between old and new growth drivers. But we can prevail with our hard work. As always, we grow in the wind and rain, and we get stronger through hard times. We must be confident.
So, Rafael, what do you think 2025 will have in store for China's economy?
I think the big problem with Chinese economy is either you believe or not the official statistics. I think right now the Chinese economy is not growing at 4.5%. It's rather growing between 2 and 3%, which is not that bad. But I think they will be facing more headwinds, as you said. I think Trump will be... It could be that Trump will try to negotiate a new deal, a second, trade deal with Xi Jinping. But first, he will apply pressure, maximum pressure through tariffs, because this is how Trump negotiates. He first punches you in the face, and then he sits down with you and talk. So that is pretty dangerous, and I think Xi Jinping is keeping close to his chest. He's a deal of the cards, and he's ready, I think, to do more stimulus of the Chinese economy. Now, the question is, how much leeway does Xi Jinping has to kind of offset the pressure from Trump? I think he can easily deliver 2% of GDP in the form of more fiscal stimulus, but not more than that. So I think the situation is pretty tricky. Now, we've always said that for the Chinese, 5% growth is a floor, because otherwise they know that the stability of the regime is in play. I think this threshold is much lower now because Xi Jinping has been building a surveillance state that is so dystopian and Orwellian that he has a pretty much stronger control over any possible dissent amongst the population. So that's why I think he's pretty sure that if negotiations go bad with Trump, he can politically afford to let the growth of the economy slow even below 2%.
All right, let's continue our trip around the globe and head home to Europe, where we are now. The EU's economic powerhouses, France and Germany, are stuck in political limbo, while perspectives for growth seem stagnant at best. Mario Draghi had outlined a plan to boost competitiveness in the bloc last year, with massive investments in the public and private sectors and in close coordination among member countries being what was advocated for in the report. What's the likelihood of that plan becoming a reality in 2025?
I think it's close to zero. Nothing big happens in Europe without a very strong commitment and an agreement between France and Germany. What Mario Draghi told us is that if we want to close the gap, the competitiveness gap Europe has with the US and China, we need to invest close to 5% of GDP every year. And the second point is that this 5% of GDP, we have to invest them together. We cannot have, a competitiveness plan for France, one for Germany, one for the Netherlands, and one for Italy. We have to do it together to harness the economies of scale. But for that, we must have an agreement that we're going to issue more debt together, like we did during the pandemic. The problem is that now France is facing a governability and a fiscal crisis. And so the credibility of France in terms of budget discipline has collapsed. And so I don't think it will be possible to convince the Germans and the Dutch that we should issue that amount of debt together to get out of this trap of non-competitiveness. So unfortunately, here the prospects are pretty dire.
Political volatility is affecting France's economy. We mentioned it. Both producer and consumer confidence badly affected here. New investments, new projects put on hold until more clarity emerges. Will the Bayrou government succeed where the Barnier government failed? And will France be able to pass a workable budget for 2025?
Well, passing a budget seems politically feasible. The problem is, will the Bayrou government have enough political capital to enact the painful fiscal measures that must be taken to avoid further deterioration in the financial situation of the country? And unfortunately, the Bayrou government, it's not a technical government that was put in place by a majority, by a consensus of the political class. What we need in France is the Mario Monti government that we had during the European crisis in Italy, where the political class is saying, okay, we are under a fiscal crisis, and so we name a technocratic government, and he's there for a year, and he's going to do the dirty job, and we commit not to threaten to topple him, because at the first thing that he does that doesn't please one party or another. Unfortunately, that is not the case. And the reason why Mr. Bayrou is not in the position of Mr. Monti is because France, the political class, the French political class, is not under enough pressure from the market to do these reforms. And unfortunately, the markets are not doing that yet. And before that, the European Commission capitulated completely in its duty to enforce a fiscal discipline on all the Euro members. They haven't done it in the past 25 years, and they should be applying pressure to the country, but they are not, because France is a big country and it's a core of Europe. So by definition, they cannot do that. So unfortunately, I don't think that Bayrou will be the government that takes the difficult measures that France needs right now.
We're looking ahead, and it's impossible to look ahead without talking about the potential impact of artificial intelligence on the world economy. Over in the U.S., tech stocks represent a huge portion of market capitalization, and they've been driven higher by AI. Yet there's a lot of talk that there might be too much excitement, that, for example, OpenAI isn't worth its over $150 billion valuation. Could 2025 be the year that the AI bubble bursts?
Well, that is a possibility, obviously. AI is a new gold rush, but nobody has found gold yet, okay? What we're seeing is that the big performance of these companies is that because they are promising returns in the future, but the profitability of this investment is still very uncertain. So the profits that we're seeing right now are mostly driven by the people who are selling the picks and shovels to the gold diggers. The gold diggers haven't found the fortune they are promising us, and NVIDIA profits are basically the capex of the hyperscalers. So there is a big question mark around this, and here it's very difficult to know what will be the technical limits to large language models, and what will be the ability of the hyperscalers to sell profitable solutions to the real economy using AI. I think a very serious assessment that has been done, it's by MIT, it's Daron Acemoglu, the winner of the Nobel Peace Prize. He said AI is boosting productivity by 25% approximately on average for 5% of all the tasks we do in the economy. So that represents a gain of only 1.25%. And that will be spread over 10 years, the diffusion of this technology. So that means that it could boost productivity by 0.125% per year. Does that justify the current valuation of the hyperscalers like Microsoft or OpenAI? The question is open.
And finally, with every year passing, the climate emergency makes itself more alarming. 2024 was marked by a series of catastrophic weather events with a clear impact on the economy. It drives up inflation for commodities, it requires costly rebuilding and investments in climate resilience. Will economic stakeholders rise up to the challenge?
Well, I think we have to. At Carmignac, we published a report 2 years ago saying that to limit global warming to 1.5% to 1.5 degrees Celsius, we need to commit huge sums of money, and that will increase global inflation by around 1.5%. And we need to invest, you know, for the transition between 2 and 3% of GDP. During a decade, but it's much better than, you know, an unmitigated climate change. That means that we could have, you know, series of catastrophic climatic events forever. But it's not only investing in the transition, as you said, it's also investing in mitigating or repairing the damage by climate events. And the IMF has estimated that this also represents some investment for developed countries of around 2% of GDP per year, and for unfortunately for developing economies is more double than that. So the key challenge is how are we going to do that when at the same time we know that we have other challenges facing governments, notably on defense. Trump yesterday said if you want to be a NATO member, you have to invest 5% of GDP, so you need to increase spending on defense by 1 to 4% of GDP, depending on the countries. We need to invest much more into reshoring our supply chains for national security reasons, and we also need to invest much more in restocking and securing key commodities inventories. So that's a huge challenge for governments. So even from just a fiscal standpoint, how are we going to face this pressure on new spending, while at the same time we know that savings are falling because of demographic aging and the fractioning of the global economy. That's why we believe at some point the pressure will be so hard that governments will be tempted to monetize deficits and debt, and that will open a new era of inflation.
That's all we have time for, unfortunately. Rafael Gallardo, chief economist at Carmignac, thank you for playing along with us here and for sharing your expert assessment of what might take place this year.
Thank you for having me. Pleasure.
Well, for those of you watching, thank you for tuning in. You can catch our previous shows on the France 24 app or website. We're on the podcast platform of your choice. Just search for People in Profit. In the meantime, more news coming up on France 24.